Are you ready to transform your financial future through mortgage note investing? Hi, I'm Jamie Bateman, host of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. As a passionate entrepreneur myself and real estate investor myself, I've dedicated my career to empowering investors like you. Join my mentorship program tailored to meet your unique business objectives with a very small financial commitment to get started. Gain access to my personal experience, trusted consultants and vendors, and receive customized mentoring services. You'll get hands-on guidance on everything from determining your buy box and reviewing your bidding processes to managing notes with third-party servicers, handling collateral, and much more. Don't wait. Visit LabradorLending.com to start your journey to abundance today. Let's unlock your full potential together. This episode is a little bit close to home. We get to hear from my brother-in-law, John Windsor. John is a licensed therapist. He runs JW Counseling, which is a side gig for him. It's a side hustle that he started last year. And we get to talk about the business angle a little bit toward the end of the episode. But John works full-time as a therapist as well for Catholic Charities. And he's got a fascinating story. He's dealt with some personal trauma, as we all have, and he's also dealt with some very serious family disruption, and I think that's largely what was the impetus behind him wanting to change career paths and get into therapy. We focus on John's shift in how he views himself with a lot more self-compassion. He used to take more of a stoic or Spartan mentality or approach, and now he really is able to see himself with a lot more compassion, but still is an action taker and is all about growth and serving others. And in today's world, man, we have a mental health crisis on our hands. I just really love John's approach, where it's he's kind of an everyday guy, if you will, who came from team sports, always had a lot of pressure on him as the oldest sibling to achieve and to perform. But he always viewed himself as less than in stature, less than in his reading capabilities. And we talk about how he's been able to overcome that and how he works with clients to be able to shift their mindset, specifically around self-compassion, but still having that element of pushing yourself to achieve and to be able to make a positive impact on others. I challenged him a little bit, talking about the ego and Michael Jordan, and you'll have to wait for those details. But he had a fantastic answer to that question. But if you're looking for a high-quality individual therapist, group therapist, family therapist, reach out to John. He's a fantastic human being.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm pumped today to have with us John Windsor of JW Counseling. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Very excited to be here, Jamie. Thank you.
Awesome. In the interest of full disclosure, John and I know each other quite well. John is my brother-in-law and not my youngest brother-in-law, but married to my youngest sister. And so I'm going to at times pretend I don't know John for the listener out there. And for the listener, John, who are you and what are you up to today?
Yeah, Jamie, thanks. I'm John Windsor. I'm a licensed professional counselor. So I have a counseling practice and also work in the public sector as well. I've been doing this for 5 years and I'm excited, but it's been a long journey getting to this point. Changing my mindset from the kind of like Spartan, what I thought was a stoic mindset, to now more of a self-compassionate, understanding, and empowering mindset. That's kind of how I've shifted things.
Interesting. And there's a lot that you just we could unpack. We won't have time for everything. I'm curious about the what you thought was stoic, versus what is actually stoic or what you think now is stoic. But anyway, let's dive into your background, your backstory, John. Again, I know a lot about you, but for the listener. So you are from the Baltimore, Maryland area, and tell us a little bit more about your childhood, if you would.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Baltimore, where lacrosse is a big thing. Sports were a big thing for me growing up. Sports school, there was a lot of pressure to do the best I could do, which I think is a good expectation to have, that we want to do our best. But growing up, being, I know we can't see it here, but being a smaller guy, so sometimes on the athletic field, that there were certain things that would get to me about being that having those kind of insecurities and dealing with them, but trying to push myself further. And I mean, that's where I really gained an idea of my identity, was sports, school, that I was the tenacious one in school and sports. That's kind of what I feel like I was known for, and what I prided myself on, which, is important.
Yeah, and I can, you didn't mention, but you are the oldest of three children, and I am the oldest in my family as well. So I can relate to, that pressure element that you talked about to achieve. Not that there's not pressure on younger siblings, but I think there may be an extra element of pressure on that oldest child sometimes to perform and be a leader, set the tone for the rest of the kids and the siblings. And I had that, whether intentional or not from my parents, it was a lot of pressure to perform and achieve. And I also had a lot of lessons learned, and team sports were a huge part of my upbringing as well. So I can relate to a lot of what you said. So in your it sounds like your identity really is what we're getting at here. Your identity was being formed in that sense, through team sports and achievement, and then you said tenacious student, something like that. Is that what you said?
In both school and the athletic field, that there was this understanding that, from my view, I guess at the time, was that I was a little bit less than, so I needed to work harder, which I wanted to work hard and, like you said, achieve. And we could talk about birth order and that kind of thing, and that does have a lot of interesting steps to it. I realize that tenacity is an important part, but it's not all of who I am. The yeah it's, well we can go into it further later, but so something that I was learning along the way was just how much other people putting things on you really impacts
Sure. I
your
think that's a
perception.
key point that we're going to focus on. And I do think you also alluded to the fact that things, certain behavioral characteristics or personality types can be good or bad, right? Tenacity is generally viewed as a good thing, right? Work ethic can be great, and it's necessary for success, I mean, honestly, most things in life that are worth anything require a good bit of work. But it sounds like in your case, maybe that got wrapped up in, like you said, other people's views of you. And then, so dive into that more. And I know we're gonna skip forward a little bit, and I want to hear about how you decided to become a therapist and go that route. But before we get there, what do you see as different now compared to back then? How do you view yourself differently now than you did back then?
I think back then there was a lot of, understandably, as kids, we view things as we're almost, our whole being is the athlete or the A student or the theater person, the musician. But really, so now I just view that as part of my life that was really important. I mean, I love some of the things I learned as an athlete, but or as a student and growing up. But yeah, it's not all of who I am, and it's always going to be it's kind of almost ever changing. The different roles that we play, the different roles that we choose to play. So that's kind of
Yeah.
where I was thinking.
Makes sense. Okay, so and some of the views that others were placing on you, it sounds like you've changed and no longer view yourself through that lens. Is that true?
I mean, definitely, and not to go too much into it, but yeah, I mean, I think what you said before too about being the oldest child, I think there's also an element. I have wonderful parents, but yeah, so sometimes I think as the oldest child and as a parent myself now, you really it's all experimentation, I guess, to an
Yeah.
extent. Like the first kid you're really learning as a parent. So it's been a really good journey being a parent and getting to see it from that perspective. But
Yeah.
yeah, trying to do the best I can to offer what I can to my son or to my daughter. But yeah, trying not to put too much on them, and trying to let them be more of a guide in what's going on in their life,
Yeah.
is something that I really try and embody. But I do love that, I was given a few things to kind of focus on in my life because it gave me stability. So like you
Yeah.
said, Jamie, it's that balance of like, almost always trying to see the middle ground of it, because it's, too much of even a good thing is not a
Is
good
not a good
thing.
thing, right? Absolutely. And I do feel like in today's day and age, I'm all for looking at trauma and understanding the impact that trauma has on our present day selves. Part of me feels bad for our parents sometimes because, now that you're a parent of two and I'm a parent of two, and I think maybe we have inherently a little more empathy than we used to for parents as well. So it's very easy for us to sit here and say, well, and you weren't saying this, but that our parents did a bad job of putting too much pressure on us for achievement, et cetera. And it's like, well, there is no playbook, and every child's different. And it's parenting is very difficult. And so, yeah, I find it there's a balancing act there of not trying to blame our parents. Certainly, some parents are very bad parents out there, but it's not easy. So, okay, so. Through sports and through academics, you were the tenacious one because you were considered less than, or at least you saw yourself that way. You mentioned being smaller in stature. And then I know as you progressed through school, there were moments where you realized you may have been less than or seen yourself as less than academically or as a learner. Can you touch on that for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I feel like I haven't ever said it out loud too much, but yeah, the idea of being a reader, that was a huge like insecurity of mine. And I mean, I don't have a diagnosed learning disability or anything I could say, but yeah, it just was a very tough thing growing up, feeling like I couldn't read aloud in class. And at that time, I was in a kind of a high pressure private school, and There's just a lot of emphasis on being really, really good. So like we're saying, I mean, it's could be parents, but it's also society or school or whatever the pressures are. So I just knew that I, you know, when I'm getting pulled out in class to go do some extra help, while it's extra and it is helpful, it's like, oh, well, I clearly know that the other, you know, 20
it's not a good sign. It's not encouraging. It's like you're slower than the rest of the kids is what, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, I feel like that's a deficit that I know a lot of people face. And I know we talked it for a second before this started. But yeah, I mean, when I was in a group therapy class at NYU going through my master's, it was interesting to see just how some of these things that happen, you know, when we're really young, 5, 6 for me, you know, trying to learn to read, like how lasting that belief can stay with us. And and sharing it in a group setting is a group of soon to be therapists. It was nice to have that empathy. But yeah, how many people, yeah, were tearful or upset just by hearing that? And not upset in the sense that they were upset for me, but I think that they really related. That's what I took, that it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Really, I'm reading a book by Gay Hendricks, and he talks about your upper limit problem. And it sounds similar to, it's like a self-imposed upper limit, you know, sounds like in some cases, maybe you had that going on. I think we all have that in certain aspects of our lives. Okay. How and why did you determine that you wanted to be a therapist?
Yeah, sure. So, So I went from the tenacity mindset, and then the school comes to an end, as we all know. And, but yeah, it was such a tough road because I was doing an economics degree at St. Mary's College of Maryland. And then all of a sudden I realized after my internship, like, I don't know if I want to, like, is this what my whole rest of my life's going to be? And there was just kind of that existential crisis of like, I don't really like this, what I've studied. I'd like some of it, but can I see myself doing it for forever? Which I definitely would stress is a cognitive distortion that a lot of young people think is like, well, what I'm doing now and what I get into is going to be the thing that I stay with forever, which is just for not sure. True. We're always changing.
Well, especially now. In today's culture, it's just not that way anymore. Maybe it used to be. But yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Go ahead.
So yeah, it's ever changing. And so then I took a bike trip and across the country, and it was inspired a lot because of my own family had some instability that happened when I was finishing up college, I guess. And someone in the family had a mental health crisis, and it was a struggle. So for the family, and then trying to figure out how I could help. And really the bike trip was the thing that I thought, like, oh, this is a way that I could tangibly help, which was at the time I was raising money for Johns Hopkins and helping in that way. But the bike trip really was a place where, you know, you talk about adversity, that there were so many times where I was facing physical adversity, going up a hill, having mishaps. I mean, I still go back to now, like the mishaps of, you know, a flat tire, you're rolling around, you're mm-hmm. rolling through your day, and then something just randomly is there. And then, kind of ruins your day, it seems like, for a moment. And that was a big mindset shift for me of like, do I want to be pissed at this random nail that was just in the road, or do I want to laugh about it and just see it as just a silly opportunity that I can, turn into just a way to slow down.
So the bike trip was after college and before you went on for your master's, is that right?
Yeah. So that's where I was doing a lot of reflection. What I wanted to do, what kind of skills I was good at, which I see myself as a good listener.
What's that?
And
No, I'm just kidding.
so yeah, I mean, there was that, and then also getting to see the progression of the issues that were going on in my family, and how the person that really seemed to help kind well help guide and navigate things was the counselor. And I really thought that that was a
Yeah.
really wonderful thing.
So you, where did the did was the bike trip a result of seeing the your family's struggles, or was it sounds like the bike trip itself allowed you a lot of space for reflection and a lot of I guess certainty in your path forward, at least for the you know, near future, and came out of the bike trip. So I guess what I'm asking is, you know, was the bike trip more of the result, more of the result, or more of the impetus for you to move on to be a therapist?
I think it was I now think of things as more of a constellation. Like there's lots of little reasons why things
Sure.
happen. And
Yeah.
the
I didn't
bicycle
phrase
trip.
that well. I'll call
No.
myself out. It wasn't the best question I've ever asked. But it sounds like the bike trip was helped you, was a result. You were raising money through the bike trip, right? And that was
Yeah.
partially because of family member struggles. But then the bike trip also allowed you the space to reflect and kind of give yourself, career guidance, if you will. Is that, am I off base there?
You're 100% accurate. I mean, I was definitely looking to figure out what I wanted to do. There was also how I could help my family, and then inherently 8 hours or 10 hours on a
Okay.
bike. And at that time, I'm sure there's lots of things you could listen to now, but at that time it was, you're listening to the breeze or the wind in your
Yeah.
ears. And so there's a lot of time for thinking, and I know this is about mental fitness too, but it's also the place where I grew to greatly appreciate the power of exercise, and how, exercise was such a crucial part of,
Yeah.
and probably almost meditative too, that you're on a bike, you're doing the same thing over and over again,
Yeah.
and you, but it brings you a lot of, well, it brought me a lot of calm energy to not mean that stress response
Yeah,
that.
and I've come to appreciate, partially through your help, I'll give you some credit here.
Thanks.
Nature, and just being outside, you know, side note, you pushed me to do the whitewater rafting about 5 years ago, and you know, in Category 5 rapids in the Upper Yaak, that was amazing. So just even that 3 hour experience was really fantastic. But I think with your bike trip, you combined, you know, space, like mental space, and nature, being outside, struggle, adversity. There's an inherent adversity. It's not easy. You biked across the country, and then I know later you did another shorter trip, which was extremely long in my view, along with, you know, community. You didn't do the bike trip by yourself, along with exercise, and then you're getting sunlight and vitamin D. And so yeah, those are, like, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts about health, physical health, mental health, and mental fitness, and not to say there's no such thing as, you know, real mental health challenges or a need for medication or anything. But if you're not doing those things we just listed, you're not even giving yourself a fighting chance. Now, easier said than done if you're suffering from a serious illness. I understand that. But yeah, I can see why the trip was a monumental, you know, experience for you. So, okay, fast forward, you after the trip. Also, I want to highlight that I love the fact that, I don't love that your family members had any kind of mental health challenges or struggles or anything like that. But I do interview a lot of people who, you know, their career path was altered because of a personal experience or the experience of close family member. So, you know, it's all academic until it comes into your world, right? And then it's like, okay, now this is now you have this purpose. Not that you didn't have purpose before, John, but you know, it's look, I know there are marriage counselors, marriage coaches who the whole reason they offer this is because their parents got divorced and that was, you know, something close to home for them. So, I love the fact that there's that human element for you that really provides that purpose and passion for you, as opposed to just reading in a book about a certain, you know, approach to cognitive therapy or whatever we're talking about. But, so walk us through from the bike trip up through today as far as your own career path, and then we can get into some more actionable things that the real estate entrepreneur might be able to apply to their mindset.
Sure. So yeah, I think even hearing you say that and appreciate, yeah, your synopsis of the bike trip for me was it was really important, and it was probably the first place where I was choosing my purpose. I think that there is certainly spiritual elements and other things that come in that, you know, it's not just my choice, but I felt like up until that point, we're talking about identity. It was a lot about, you know, how can I make others, how can I think about what others need me to be versus, you know, choosing to be the person that I feel like I can be and the person that I want to be. And so, yeah, then after the bike trip, I took a kind of, I'm not, some people might say because I did that bike trip that I'm not risk averse, but I certainly am risk averse. So it took me a while to kind of like slowly step into the mental health field. I took a few classes at the community college near us, then got to my, I moved up to New York and New Jersey and ended up getting into NYU, which at the time, again, that was like an expectation breaker. I didn't see myself as being even, I was surprised that I got in. And then I was all of a sudden in class with a bunch of people that,
Bunch of smart people. I mean,
So,
that's awesome. I mean, congrats for
yeah.
that. And I don't know if you would touch on this, but you also served in the military, so thank you for your service.
Thanks. Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, I took the, I don't think I'm ADHD, but I think that there's a lot that I was doing at the time. I was because I did the Air Force Reserves, which was a tremendous experience and opportunity. And yeah, thank you for your service. I know you've served and
You're welcome. That's the only reason I thanked you.
yeah, it's important to, yeah, thank ourselves and but yeah, it, so that was another big growth experience that I felt like I got. But while I was doing a full-time job and getting married and doing and just getting used to the
And then you
family.
did the reserves at the same time, right? Yeah,
Yeah,
I
so
did all of that as well. It's no joke. That's a lot. And then I know your wife has done extra academics or a really impressive program recently, so you all have still had a lot on your plate. So yeah, I that doesn't yeah, I don't think you're ADHD either, but I agree you are a methodical, careful person. You don't necessarily just jump into risk immediately. So you find
so
yourself admitted to NYU, you're taking classes there. Tell us a little bit more about that.
yeah, I mean that really shaped a lot of what I understood was counseling. But before you really get into it, you have expectations from or thoughts from the media, from movies and stuff, and you know, it's the person that's going to tell you what to do or you know, how are you feeling? Which I do use that question, but is a stereotypical therapist. But yeah, so I really grew to understand a lot more about people, and what I really loved was that, you know, every single person has such a vast different experience. That's what I always like come back to, like why I find it so interesting. And reflecting on economics compared to psychology is interesting because to me, economics was always like, what is the rational question was like always like, what's the rational consumer going to do? So like we're always trying to put this like this thought into this one rational person, and then I go from that, which I really liked, to now working with not irrational, but just like everybody has different viewpoints on things. I did abnormal psychology, so yeah, it's yeah. really, you know, it's
we're
out
all
there.
We're all a little bit crazy, right?
We are, yeah.
But no, I get what you're saying. And people are very complex and unpredictable. And if you're ever just bored with life, go study a person, right? Or psychology. It's like, it's fascinating. I only took Psych 101, and I remember being fascinated by the fact that you could, apparently, if you smile, that can induce, you know, happiness or feeling of happiness. And I was blown away. I was like, wait a minute, I thought the smile was just a result of happiness. And, you know, so you're pursuing your master's at NYU, and that was largely because of, you know, the family reasons, along with the bike trip solidifying your purpose, and you want to serve others, and you're fascinated by psychology people and how they think and how they work. And so last year, 2023, you started your counseling service. You have a full-time job, but you also have your counseling service, so you have a side hustle. I think a lot of the listeners can appreciate that. You know, so you've started your kind of side hustle, very much related to your industry, your full-time industry. Talk a little bit about JW Counseling, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. The JW Counseling was something that I thought about for a long time. Going back to, I feel like this, talking this out is interesting too, because there's certainly a journey that we all take, and I've told other clients this, but hearing you talk about Psych 101 made me reflect on, I remember in college, I had to fill a credit, and I went into Psych 101 for the first time. I was probably 20, and I sat in there for a day, and I was like, what is this? Like, I don't connect to it. And so it was so funny that, you know, a couple of years later and some reflection and all this, like that became like what I've really focused on. I was just confused how I would learn all that stuff. And so, I just dropped in the class. And
yeah. Well, timing is huge in context. You know, I mean, I didn't used to appreciate history. Now it's like, see history repeating itself. Go ahead.
And I touch on that because it's important to remember timing, like you're saying. And then like another part that I really think is important for whether it's the bike trip or NYU or this counseling is going into it, but also almost appreciating that there's like a naiveness. I don't even know what to call it. Like just a part that just doesn't know what you're going to face. Like if I went into the bike trip or this counseling endeavor, thinking about all the things that I would have to face or like struggle through, it wouldn't be, I probably wouldn't do it. So like working with and almost appreciating that, like almost childlike, I'm just going to jump into this.
Yeah.
See how the water feels. And, you know, I can get out of it if I want, but
yeah.
It's super important to make the leap. And so it took me a while to make that leap. And I did, but part of what I did for that and to cushion the blow, once I did take the leap was, I know I mentioned the mindset before. I definitely had this idea that the stoicism or the, I like the idea of Spartan mindset more, which to me, that kind of means you're going to push yourself. You're going to be relentless and you're going to work really hard, but you're not really going to reward yourself ever. Like if you ever really let yourself reward what you've been doing, then that's like boastful or it's selfish, or I don't know, there's all these things that tie into it. And so along the way, I switched from that to more of a self-compassionate mindset, which is based on Kristen Neff's work at University of Texas, and Chris Germer, I think his name is. Just this idea that we're all going through something difficult at times. And it's better, instead of ignoring it and pretending like it doesn't exist, which is what I thought stoicism was, just ignore the emotions and pretend they don't exist, then self-compassion teaches to notice it, acknowledge it, but also encourage yourself. So the three parts of it are self-kindness, mindfulness, so being present to what's going on with myself or you or anyone else, and then common humanity, recognizing that everybody goes through difficult things. So really tied together a lot for me. And so that's what I've been working with, I guess, ever since I started my own business, because it's a lot to go from a structured, I mean, I know your listeners do it a lot, but like going from that W-2 job, which seems stable. Stable-ish.
Right. And then seems stable, but no, you're right. I don't recommend it for everyone. And you're doing it in a somewhat similar fashion to how I did, which was not ripping off the Band-Aid all at once. And who knows where it will go for you or me, for that matter. But yeah, some people just jump in with 2 feet. They just quit their job and then don't have a plan. And you started a side hustle, which I think is really smart, which is related to your industry, like we said. So there's not a huge element of risk there, I'd say, from a business or income standpoint. And I love that. So 2023, you started the counseling practice, and you're right. It does, though, you've got to take action. It's like still a mindset shift to take the action. And I'm jumping around a little bit here, but the self-compassion, I guess where I get hung up, and maybe some listeners do, I probably need more self-compassion, not saying I don't, but does that mean you don't have standards and you just forgive yourself and you just let yourself slide? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I remember I was in my internship, and when I was just learning about this, I sent an email to, I believe it was Chris Germer, who again is working with Kristen Neff on this whole idea. And that was a risk in itself. Like, oh, I'm just going to email this person that seems like they know what they're doing. And he responded with a really good point, because growing up with that mindset of like, that if you don't keep pushing yourself, then you're gonna, like, what's moving you forward?
Right. I think of it
like a really good friend. I know we talked offline about this too, but like, a really good friend would not enable you. They would not just kind of sit there and be like, Jamie, that's great. Like something terrible has happened, and you're a really good friend would be empathetic, but also help empower you. And that's really what I think of is really important. And so much comes out about decision-making comes down to empowerment. How can we empower ourselves to make that leap? Whether it's with the naivete of the younger version of ourselves, or with that, but also coming from a place of, okay, it's the right time, I need to do it. So finding that empowerment was a big part of the self-compassion. What that looks like on a day-to-day basis is, I'm definitely checking in with myself a lot more. What that means too is, I'll notice and try and name, like, okay, before this podcast, I'm feeling some anxiety, I'm feeling some nervousness, noticing the sensations maybe in my stomach, my chest, my heart beating, acknowledging that those things are happening, but also telling myself, I can get through it. Being that encouraging, coaching kind of voice versus the hardcore drill sergeant that I thought was gonna help me. That's been a big help.
Sure. Well, if you didn't have any nervousness, I think I'm I think this is your first podcast. That
Yes.
would mean to me that you just probably just didn't care enough. So it's a good thing that you've got a little bit of energy and excitement and nervousness. So I don't think stress is bad in that sense. Just my, I think stress gets a bad rap these days. But how do you reconcile? And as we move toward the end of the episode here, I have more rapid fire questions. But how do you reconcile? I guess it's a rephrasing of the same question from before. Somebody like Michael Jordan, he's just like super driven, or at least was, and was the best basketball player ever to play. No controversy there. But, couldn't you argue that he wouldn't have impacted as many people in a positive way if he'd maybe had more self-compassion, wouldn't have given as much to the world? And I mean, it's just incredible what he accomplished. And how do you reconcile those two things?
I think being able to be okay with yourself while you're going through difficult things is really what self-compassion is built on. But it's interesting, before the podcast started, I was thinking about I thought about a person that helped Michael Jordan, among others, and Kobe Bryant, and his name's George Mumford. And he was I don't remember his official title from the Bulls, but he was in The Last Dance, and you can see him there. But he really was kind of that thoughtful mindfulness teaching person that,
Mindfulness and performance expert is what Google says.
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So he has his own adversity and abundance, and yeah, I would definitely recommend to check his stuff out. But I think it's coming back to, just being in the present is super important. And I know in The Last Dance, that's something that's sticking out in my mind right now, is that somebody talked about how much how he was always present. He was always in the moment, and it's really coming back to, like, Viktor Frankl or any of these people that are really about, finding choice. In any situation, we do have choices. And, when we're more present, like Jordan was, he can make that shot. And did he think about all that before he made the shot? No, but I mean, there's an element there where it's less about, to me, it seems like it's less about being the drill sergeant and more, how can I enable myself to be as present as I can so I can make the choice? Because, I mean, so many times we feel like it's either I can either do A or B, or I only have, or I have no options. But really, you always have an option. And that's, Viktor Frankl says, our last freedom is really to choose the attitude that we want. And he's coming from a concentration camp in Germany. And so,
Some
like,
serious adversity, right? So no, that's a great answer about Jordan, because so he did have a performance and mindset or mindfulness coach or therapist, whatever. And so it's not like he didn't rely on someone like you for to better his performance. And also what comes to mind for me is Jordan must have had some self-compassion, because they say about great athletes, you need to be able to kind of have a very short memory, in the middle of a game, getting to your point about being present. If he missed five shots in a row, he's forgotten about those, and he takes that sixth shot and hits it because he's present. So if he was overly critical, self-critical, he wouldn't have been as good as he was. So that's a great answer. So before we move on to the rapid fire questions, JW Counseling, who's your kind of ideal client, or who are you looking to work with?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that that's always developing and changing, but right now it's individuals, couples, and families. I have a lot of experience with individuals and family, in the public sector, but also yeah. So I'm bringing that, and then couples is something I'm learning. I've been learning about for a long time ever since NYU, and so that's a new frontier, I guess, that I'm thinking and growing in my abilities with. But I do feel confident with that. So all those, I guess, topic wise, anxiety, depression, ADHD, PTSD, so reworking traumas. But like you said, Jamie, and I'm really of the opinion that everybody, whether we want to call it a trauma, like there's always impactful things that happen in everyone's life that, it might, in our profession, sometimes it's called a capital T trauma. Like just because you don't have a capital T trauma being like, I survived an earthquake or something catastrophic, doesn't mean that we can't like rework some of those beliefs that come from
Sure.
those events. So
And you work in person as well as online. And I noticed you have the walk and talk option as well. How would you say you separate yourself from all the other therapists out there? How's your approach unique?
my approach is unique. The walk and talk is a newer thing, and it's certainly grown in from COVID. Maybe
So it's a mask.
benefit
We're
from
wearing masks and walking. I'm just kidding.
no, but and that comes from also, yeah, my roots of the bike trip and knowing that how important, like you said, nature, exercise. Also, there's something about walking because you don't have to see eye to eye. Like there's an element there where it's really comforting.
It's
I'm
like
also,
you're side by side on a journey together kind of thing.
yeah, side by side on a journey. Also, not to get too into the science, but yeah, when you're looking specifically or directly into someone else's eyes, like eye contact can be feel very uncomfortable, even when we're sharing something vulnerable. So that's something I think I separate myself with, being that energetic, kind and compassionate person that's always going to see the cherishing the divine within. That's the Catholic Charities view, but something that I really remember and something that I take from a lot of the different therapy routes that I listen to, that we all have inner wisdom to guide us, that we all have the sense of self or soul or whatever we want to call it. So yeah, I mean that's always what I'm coming back to, is that I love what I do, and I really enjoy working with people and the rich tapestry of whatever's going on with
Well,
them.
like we highlighted, you've had your own personal trauma as well as, very real family struggles, and so you have that drive from that pain that's been experienced, and you want to help others deal with similar situations. So I think that's huge as well. All right, you ready for some rapid fire questions? We're almost out of time.
I'll do my best, yeah.
And I just want to say you are an awesome listener, as well as somebody who takes action and kind of have those really good blend of, I'll just say, masculine and feminine traits in a sense, where it's like you're a hardcore, like when we work out, it's like you're not messing around. So you're not afraid of hard work, like you said, tenacious, but then sort of that more, we'll say passive, but it's really active listening. Which I would argue most therapists probably don't have such an awesome blend of that those skills. So, all right.
Thanks.
If you ha could have coffee with any historical figure or a bourbon, if you prefer, who would you choose?
I guess I'd have an Irish coffee with Theodore Roosevelt, first person that comes to
Okay,
mind.
nice. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it?
It's funny, yeah, that puts a lot of responsibility on me. Like I feel like I would certainly try the tithing idea, giving away a certain amount. Growing the JW counseling would be something else. also an offshoot. I know you've had another guest on here, but starting a bike trip business, or bicycle trip
Yeah.
business will be another element, more of a wellness and less therapy direct. But yeah, so those were things that come to mind.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How about a book or two that you could recommend for my listener?
A book or two. I reference Viktor Frankl. People have to read Man's Search for Meaning. It's such a,
Yeah,
even though it's
you may have mentioned that one to me once or 200 times.
yeah, so there's so much to gain from his experience and yeah, so Man's Search for Meaning, and it applies to everybody. It's not just men. I guess another one that I'm reading right now is Get Out of My I'm just looking at it now. Get Out of Your Mind and Into Your Life. And it's about acceptance and commitment therapy. So working with our cognitions and how we grew to understand our own thinking. So like how can we understand our thinking and how can we change it to make
Awesome.
it more helpful?
What's a struggle that you're facing in your business right now?
Even with the jumping in, like I said, and the empowerment, there's still strong avoidances sometimes to like face some of those things that even objectively, sometimes you say them aloud and you're like, why am I avoiding that? Like that insurance company to get credentialed or something. Like I don't know why, but I know I'll get there. So yeah, again, being compassionate.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like this has been therapeutic for you, so I'll invoice you after this. If you can recap, and we're almost out of time here, but so for the listeners, say the real estate entrepreneur, I know you're not necessarily a real estate entrepreneur, but you are an entrepreneur and you deal heavily with mental health and mental fitness. One or two takeaways or kind of steps for the real estate entrepreneur out there, what would you say that those would be?
Yeah, I think a lot of it can be applicable to decision making. You know, how do we come from that, and where do we make good decisions? Is it out of a scarcity, fear-based mindset, or is it from a, it doesn't always have to be compassion, but a place of real wisdom and empowerment to make the decision that we need to make. So, I mean, whether that's making a counseling company or it's buying another house, or and I know we've talked a lot about bigger pockets throughout the years. So, I mean, I always really liked those podcasts with Brandon talking about just ways to make wise decisions
Sure,
and ones that are
mindset.
going to help.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
mindset, yeah.
I love that. From adversity to abundance, from a mindset standpoint, right? Awesome. What's one thing that's controversial in the therapy world that you see today?
The type of therapy that I am really getting into is internal family systems and the Frank Anderson and Richard Schwartz is the founder, and his big thing is that there's no bad parts of us. So while that might not seem controversial, you know, you talk to someone that is quote unquote an alcoholic, yeah, that quickly becomes, well, that's not a good part of me,
Sure.
part of the drinks. But so understanding that we all have parts that might be difficult to relate to, that we might hate about ourselves, that's really at the core, trying to change the connection that we have, a relationship to those parts.
Got
But
it.
certainly controversial to say that there's no bad parts when a lot of mental health is based on getting rid of a symptom. But really, we're trying to
Out with the
just
bad, in with the good.
yeah.
Got it. From Dumb and Dumber. All right, John Windsor, JW Counseling. We are out of time. I know you and I both have another call to hop on here. So thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your story as well as just your the changes you've made in your own view of yourself, introducing more self-compassion, but also the encouragement to continue that growth along that growth path. And that doesn't mean self-compassion doesn't mean limiting yourself. It actually can be very much in support of growth and serving others. And kudos to you for starting your own business. And I highly recommend the listener, if you need a quality therapist, I definitely recommend you reach out to John for sure. So John, any words of wisdom as we sign off?
Thank you so much, Jamie, and I appreciate you and the opportunity and the time and yeah, it's been wonderful, so thanks.
Awesome. And to the listener, thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment. So you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com.